The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Slayer! Slayer! Slayer!
Used to be the chant that you'd hear every time you go see a local band at the pub. People would always be yelling, Slayer! Play some Slayer! Well, today we're going to be playing some Slayer. We're going to be talking to Slayer, the creator of Slayer, Kerry King. Is on Talk is Jericho, and the new Slayer record, Repentless, is out today. First record without guitar player Jeff Hanneman, who passed away back in 2013. First in many years without longtime producer Rick Rubin. First in many years not on American Deaf American Records. But don't worry, Repentless, still 100% Slayer at full throttle. Slayer! Slayer! It's headbanging loud and fast, loaded with killer riffs. Tom Araya's vocals are filled with explosive rage. He's just a nutcase. And, of course, the amazing guitar solos of Kerry King. So good to talk to Kerry. I've known him for years. Actually, a really nice guy. That's a secret. Don't tell anybody that. We're going to talk to Kerry about all things Slayer, including some great stories about the big four they did with Metallica, Megadeth, and Anthrax. He remembers his friend and bandmate and partner, Jeff Hanneman, and introduces us to the newest members of Slayer, including Gary Holt from Exodus, another great guy. And though Kerry admits turning 50 has changed his diet a little, it hasn't slowed him down at all. He's still a road dog, still rocking, going crazy, thrashing, headbanging. He's 50. I'm 44. I haven't slowed down either. Still rocking with Fozzy at the highest level, back with the WWE for the Y2J Fall Tour, performing at the highest level that I've set for myself. And one thing that's been helping me continue to do that is Recovery Max. Fast-absorbing post-workout formula comes in both a cream and a spray, accelerates your recovery, and almost instantly relieves the pain of intense training. I'm using the spray right now because it's so easy and fast. My knee is tightening up on me a little bit. Been doing a lot of bike riding. Had a little soreness, a little tightness. Put some Recovery Max on there, and voila, I am oiled and lubricated and ready to rock, man. Recovery Max is made with 100% natural ingredients. Here's what it does. Recovery Max increases circulation, reduces lactic acid buildup to relieve tired and sore muscles, helps prevent muscle strain, could keep you from your next workout. And if you work out, then you probably already know this, it's the recovery period after training that's just as important as the time you spend in the gym. Recovery time helps reduce the risk of injury and muscle strains, and you don't have to be a pro wrestler to know how important that is. You don't have to be a energetic stage performer to know how important that is. Recovery Max is an Australian formulation proudly made in the USA. It's the only product with arnica, emu oil, and rosemary oil for all-natural, long-lasting relief that won't leave your skin greasy, if you're an old guy from Canada. Greasy, I would say greasy, that's me. Or make you smell like a medicine cabinet. I hate that smell, that Tiger Balm smell. Ugh. But Recovery Max doesn't have that. I spray Recovery Max on right after my workout, right after my match, right after my Fozzy gig. I rub it in, and if I have any especially sore spots, I spray it a second time. All right, Recovery Max is made for people like you, helps you crush your fitness goals, and gets maximum results from training and recovery time, okay? Order Recovery Max post-workout cream or spray today from recoverymax.com or drugstore.com or search keyword Recovery Max on Amazon. And hey, if you get it from Amazon, you know what to do. Use the TIJ links. Are you sore? Are you tight? Are you having muscle issues? Use Recovery Max and get back to 100% today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride because it's Friday. We got Kerry King from Slayer, so let's play some thrash from Fozzy. This is Blood Happens kicking it off right here on Talk is Jericho.
Steal a double-barreled key, keep a living my life on the fly. I'm a cold breaker, face shaker, I'm a petty earthquake. I'm not gonna stop till I die. The time has come to raise the place to the ground. The time has come and now the hammer will pound. It's time to run when the fist starts to fly. The time has come when you're hit, you know that you can't deny.
Run out! shell of a crimson shaded heartstopper wearing the crest of a knave. I'm a night stalker, streetwalker, dirty dealing back talker. Won't ever see me again. The time has come to raise the place to the ground. The time has come and now the hammer will pound. It's time to run when the fist starts to fly. The time has come when you're hit, you know that you can't deny.
Killer growling death vocals from Rich Ward in the Slayer spirit. Slayer! Slayer! We hear that sometimes. Slayer! Actually, we don't hear it so much anymore, but most bands that you go to see in a club, I used to love that. Slayer! Kerry King from Slayer makes his Talk is Jericho debut, and we're going to do some serious headbanging with the King. But before we do, if you're looking for something to do in Los Angeles on Friday night in L.A., head out to the Roxy on the famous Sunset Strip and check out my boy Paul Stanley's new band, Soul Station, all right? This is not Kiss. It has nothing to do with Kiss. It's a 10-piece Motown band that pays tribute to soul music from the 60s that Paul loves. He's gonna rock this thing. I know Eric Singer from Kiss, also on drums, but Paul won't be playing a guitar. You won't hear a single Kiss song. It's just Paul singing soul music. You're going to love it. He's been rehearsing his ass off for this. It's a passion project for him. I can't wait to see it. I'm really excited to check out Soul Station. If you can't check out the Roxy gig, I believe it's probably almost sold out at this point. He's going to be taking this on the road doing sporadic gigs. It's always cool when you get guys doing something different outside of the box. You should go check out Blood Divisions, my new kind of a super group that I put together with David Austin from Nasty Savage, Greg Gall from 6 Feet Under, Terry Butler from Obituary and Death, and Ralph Santola from Death. Kind of a Florida thrash metal, death metal supergroup. We have a 2-song EP out right now called Blood Divisions. We reworked Nasty Savage's The Morgue and The Scorpions' Top of the Bill. We covered that. Very, very cool. And proceeds from that go to the charity, go to the Humane Society in Tennessee. So, yeah, if you're looking for some new Chris Jericho vocals, if you've been waiting a long time to hear something new from Fozzy, well, we're working on it. Working on some stuff right now. I got about 7 sets of lyrics written, and Rich has a bunch of song ideas. He's currently doing a new Stuck Mojo record, but it will be out. It'll be finished soon, and then we start working on the Fozzy record. But if you want something to tide you over, go check out Blood Divisions. It's on iTunes now. Love Kerry King. Good dude. My favorite King story is we were playing Soundwave with them a few years ago. Slayer and Metallica was on it. Anthrax was on it. It was just a Blink 182. It doesn't really fit. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things is not the same. But it still was a lot of fun. And we, for whatever reason, King likes Fozzy. He likes our attitude and our energetic stage presence and the fun that we have on stage. You know, because like I always say, we try and be Van Halen from 1979. I think Kerry digs that. So whenever we play with Slayer, which is quite often, it seems like we're kind of always around those guys. Sometimes I'll look over on the side of the stage, and there's the King. He's right there. So I was getting ready for the gig in Perth, which was the last show in Soundwave. And King and Gary Holt, guitar player from Slayer and Exodus, another heavy metal legend in his own right, came over to the side of the stage and they're like, yeah, we're going to check out your show. So great. You know, you want to put on a little bit of an extra show. It's always cool when you look over on the side of the stage and see, you know, Kerry King and Gary Holt, or when we did Heavy Montreal, Randy Bly and Corey Taylor, both Talk Is Jericho alumni, standing on the side of the stage at, you know, 12 o'clock in the afternoon watching us play, and the whole show too. They're not just popping over for a second. So Kerry is over there with Holt, and I want to put on a good show. It's you know, they want to see Fozzy rock. So I go up on the drum riser and I jump off the drum riser for the end of one of the songs. It's a trick I do quite often, you know, not doing the David Lee Roth double split. I'm not that physically adept, but I do a little, you know, toe touch, jump up in the air, touch your heels type of a thing, and always looks good in pictures and it always looks good for the live crowd. I jump off the drum riser and I land on the stage and just totally bail. I fall. Like I fall right on my ass, right on my ass, and kind of roll into my stomach. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, not only do you fall in front of all the fans who know that you've fallen, but I got Kerry King on the side of the stage who, you know, he's been a bro for 15 years. He now has the lifetime right to bust my balls because I fell down on stage. You know, had he fallen down on stage, I would have that on him for his entire life. But I'm like, I can't let him have this. You know, I got to steal this back. So I kind of, all in one motion, you know, time moving slow, the minutes seem like hours, if I can quote Hetfield. But I land on my ass and I kind of roll on my stomach and I'm like, forget it. Screw it. I'm going for it. I push myself over kind of like in a handstand onto my feet. As I'm doing this, I'm unhooking my wireless pack from the back of my pants, throwing it on the stage and taking out my inner ears and holding them in my hand as I'm rolling onto my feet, and then I just launch myself into the crowd, hoping that someone will catch me and hoping that no one will steal my inner ears, because inner ears are expensive to make. You got to get them molded. You got to get them fitted in your ears. It's a long process. And if I lose my pack, which is, inner ears is like, it's an inner ear monitor system for singers or musicians. So everyone wears them nowadays. You put the inner ears in, you hook the microphone pack, it's like a microphone pack, onto your belt or in your pocket, and then that allows you to hear better when you're singing. You can hear your vocals better, and it just works better. So, but if you lose that, it's expensive. So I took it off and put it on the stage, and I stood up and I jumped into the crowd, and thankfully people caught me in. I did a little crowd surf and they brought me back on the stage. When they brought me back on the stage, I landed like a cat right on my feet, and I looked over at King and I gave him the finger. I was like, you know, F you, man. You almost had me, but I snatched, you know, victory from the jaws of defeat. And he was so angry. And after, he's like, you son of a bitch. I had you. There was nothing you could have said. There's nothing you could have done. And you pulled it off. You got out of it. And I was like, yes, because I am, you know, I am Jericho. But man, I was so terrified when I fell, because I was like, this guy is going to stick it to me, man. You know, you got to be careful when you're on stage and you're jumping up and down and doing that sort of thing. We were with Steel Panther in Australia. Again, seems like it happens to me in Australia all the time, back in December of 2013. And I had a couple cocktails after the show. This was not in Perth. This was in Adelaide. And I walked onto the stage for their final song, where they have all the girls come on stage and everyone's dancing. It might be Death to All But Metal. I can't remember what song it is that they do last. Same thing. I walk into the drum riser and I jump off and do my big patented Jericho toe touch, heel touch. But when I'm flying off the stage, I realize that the drum riser, this isn't a Fozzy drum riser, which goes straight down. The Steel Panther riser goes like a pyramid. It kind of has this angle. So when I jump off it, I'm like, I have to clear this pyramid. Problem is, when I clear the pyramid, I got to go extra far, and I, you know, land on my feet and then just totally fall on my ass. And as I'm falling, this one, I don't know if they're strippers or just chicks that want to have a good time. She's wearing a nurse's outfit and just total body checker, man. Just jump off the stage, trying to avoid the edge of this pyramid drum riser, hit the ground hard, fall down, and just totally take out this nurse. You know, and it wasn't a sexual thing. It was just, it wasn't like, hey, baby, how are you? It was like, ugh! You know when you hear that sound, like, ugh! That's the sound she made. Ugh! So I apologize to the random nurse if you're listening to this. You wore your fine nurse outfit to the Steel Panther show, and then you got taken out by Jericho. I apologize. And then the other time, I download in England. This is not Australia. It was in 2005, the first time we ever played Download, and I was super excited. Download is the biggest festival that you can play in England. You know, you're talking 100,000 people. This was like the little small stage on the side, which still had probably 10,000 people there, most people we've ever played for with Fozzy. And the beginning song was Nameless Faceless. This was on the All That Remains tour. So right off the bat, I was super excited, and I just like ran straight off the stage and jumped into the pit. And there was a big area, it's probably about, I don't know, a 6-foot stage and then a big pit area. And I was just like, you know, I'm jumping right. I don't know what I was planning on doing, jumping in and slapping some hands, you know, oh boy, big deal. But I jumped into the pit. But when I landed with both my feet. I could feel them as if it was a cartoon and they were suddenly made of rubber bands, where they kind of both turned in to where it seemed like my inner ankle bone was touching the ground. Like, that's how far turned in my feet were. And I was so lucky to not break both my feet, you know, break both my ankles. Because I was like, first of all, boy, would that suck, breaking both your ankles. You couldn't walk. You wouldn't be able to do anything. I'm in a foreign country. I don't know what to do. I'm in the middle of a field. But even worse, it's the first song of the set. I haven't even sang anything yet. Like, just right off the bat, we come on stage, big crash and burn. I just jump into this pit. And I'm like, you know, if I can't get back on stage, I'm going to have to sing this whole show on the muddy ground, you know, on my knees, singing this song, singing this set. You know, we got 30 minutes to play. And thank God I didn't break my ankles and I was able, you know, to just stand up and sing the song. But then, of course, I turn around. It's a 6-foot stage. I'm 5'11". How the hell do I get back on this stage? You know, it's not like there's a staircase there for me to get back on. So eventually, in a very un-rock and roll matter, I climbed back onto the stage and continued singing. And that's the thing, like when you do stuff like that, you know, what goes up must come down. But when you're coming down, it never looks as cool. It's like Andy Biersack when he was on Talk to Jericho. Go back and listen to him. He was a great guest when he said that he climbed up to the top of that statue in the middle of Hollywood, and once you climb up, how do you get down? He tried to jump off and broke all his ribs, and that's the same thing to me. I always climb the scaffolding on the side of the stage. You can go look and see most Downloads are scaffolding, and there's Jericho climbing up, and it's always cool to climb up because I stick the microphone in my pocket and I climb up the scaffold. But once you get up there, you sing a couple verses, but people can't really see you, and you can only, you know, move so much. You've got to hold on for dear life. You know, I'm 15 feet in the air. And coming down is the problem because, once again, you got to stick the microphone in your pocket. And then when you're climbing up, you're looking up and you can, you know, see the next step in the next rung in the ladder that you're supposed to be climbing. But when you're climbing down, you got to kind of look down and slowly find your footing. So you can climb up there like a banshee, like, all right, Jericho's climbing to the top of the stage, here he is. And then you got to start climbing back down again. And that's never as rock and roll as the way up. So be careful when you're rocking. Don't fall down. Don't take down nurses. And don't bust your ass in front of thrash metal legends like Kerry King, who will be on Talk Is Jericho today. Got a great conversation coming up with him. His favorite team, the LA Raiders. He loves football. He loves the Oakland Raiders / LA Raiders. And for him, he's really excited that the NFL season has officially started. And so am I. And so are you, and I'll tell you why. If you want to go to a game this weekend, you can make it happen if you download the SeatGeek app. You want to go check out an NFL game, your favorite team, in whatever city you're in, go to SeatGeek. It's the easiest way to find tickets, especially if you're looking at the last minute, all right? SeatGeek is an amazing app that does tons of things that other ticketing sites don't like. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of online ticket sellers to create a one-stop shop for tickets, okay? Who you want to see this weekend? You got the Bears?
You want to see the Bears? They got a home opener. How about the Texans, Redskins, Chargers, Broncos? So many teams. How about Peyton Manning take on the Baltimore Ravens in Denver in person? Huh? What do you think about that? Download SeatGeek if you're in Denver. Score yourself some tickets. You'll see virtually every ticket option available for that game all on one page. No need to check any other sites. And guess what? If you use my promo code ChrisJ in the SeatGeek app, you get $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's what you can do. Something else SeatGeek does. They have a great feature called Deal Score. Ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score. Shows you the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of whatever stadium you're trying to buy tickets for. That's cool. The color-coded map lets you easily identify the best ticket values in the building in one glance. So the closer to 100 the deal score is, the better the deal. And then you definitely know if you're getting a good deal in the seats or maybe paying too high over face value. This is what SeatGeek can do for you, man. This is pretty damn cool, man. I actually tried this out a few weeks ago, and it is above and beyond. You're talking about StubHub or something like that? Forget that. Go to SeatGeek, all right? Another thing you can do is you store your credit card info right in the app. Then you complete your purchase in two quick taps. No faster way to buy tickets. Download the free SeatGeek app today. Use my promo code ChrisJ and get $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase, okay? Once again, redeem your promo code and save the $20. You download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code ChrisJ, then SeatGeek will send you the $20 rebate once you made your first purchase on tickets, okay? Do it. SeatGeek is the app to use if you want to buy tickets last minute. Use the promo code ChrisJ and get the best seats in the house, baby.
All right, DraftKings number one.
DraftKings Ultimate Fantasy Podcast.
Hey, it's John Kincaid. Have you checked out the DraftKings Ultimate Fantasy Podcast yet? Some fantasy insights from some of the best insiders from DraftKings. Also, too, we've got the best celebrity guests stopping on by to share their love of fantasy and maybe an insight or two. It's a must listen every single Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
So we're in the illustrious trailer dressing room of Slayer with my old buddy Kerry King and another. It's like you're the social butterfly, man. It's like it's hard to get you to come in here because everybody's in there and they're having shots and you're like, come on, have some shots.
The problem is Gary Holt's a little under the weather, so he's not hanging that much. So I pretty much got to hold court.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the tour manager from Manson, Sully's a good old friend of mine. Steve Everett, a good old friend of mine who used to be in the NFL, and it's just hanging with people, making sure they're having fun, making time for them, and making time for this, which was kind of tough today because of the weather.
Well, and that's the thing, but when you come to a festival, it's almost like old home week, like a summer camp reunion, because you walk. I like walking around like the catering area and just seeing, like, you say, oh dude, I haven't seen you in 2 years since the last festival, or every time you play a festival, it's always kind of fun to see who's going to show up.
It's gotten for me a little weird to where I'll send people to get catering for me.
Uh-huh.
Because it just becomes not fun, you know? It becomes not fun. You want to eat. Everybody wants pictures. I get it. I want to take pictures with them. But, you know, if I'm eating, that's one of the only times in the day that's me time.
Right.
It's like, dude, I got to do this. If I don't do this right now, I can't eat before I go on. Because, you know, when you're headbanging, let me put it this way so people get it. When you're headbanging, you know, and you're going, yeah, headbanging. And then it's burp, burp, meat. Is this coming out? I don't know. So there's a window when you can eat.
There is.
Yeah. And if I don't hit that window, I got to, like, wing it and have, like, granola bars or chips or whatever, you know. It's hard. It's a stupid problem, but it's my problem.
But it is hard, though, because, like, you'll say, like, I'm going to go grab a bite, and it might take you 45 minutes to get to catering because you see so many people that you haven't seen.
Yeah, man. It used to be I could eat, like, an hour and a half before a show. Then it became 2 hours, and it became 3 hours. I'm about 3 hours right now. Just, that's part of getting old, you know?
Yeah.
Sucks.
You mentioned headbanging. I watch, and you guys are always, like, always headbanging, always, like, you're and it's like kind of like if you took Angus Young and put him on Fast Forward, that's kind of you. It's always thrashing.
I appreciate
to the beat.
That, you and know, what I mean? I like that, and that's what I, you know, I don't set myself to be like Angus, but he's a good icon to be like. There's nothing wrong with that.
Good barometer,
and I want to, you know, that's all I know is headbanging. Like, if I was like Tom, and I'm not taking any away from Tom, but if I was like Tom and couldn't headbang, I wouldn't know what to do. And he didn't either. You know, when that happened to him,
when he had his neck problems and back problems.
It was hard for him. And like I think it was not the first show, but the second show when he came back from that, I saw him headbang. I'm like, what are you doing? And he caught himself because it's so natural. You know, that's what we do.
Right.
And that was taken away from him. So he had to learn how to have swagger without headbanging. So it's almost relearning. It's weird for a thrash band that's headbanged for, at that point, 25 years, whatever it was. I saw it. It was hard for him, and I felt bad for him.
Is he feeling better now? He looks a little bit better. Did he have some kind of surgery? He just can't headbang anymore. Tom,
he had way back then.
Yeah,
that?
2 years ago.
No. It was when Christ Illusion came out. So 2007, I think.
Okay, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
2007.
It was.
Yeah.
And he had pretty much stone cold surgery. Like, he had some metal put in his vertebrae, and he came back, and I saw it being weird for him. And I tasted it a little bit, because right after that, I don't know, maybe 2 years after that, I canceled my only show ever.
Really?
Ever. And I was that dude. I was sitting in my bed in the hotel talking to my tour manager. I'm like, how far can you push this back? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, keep telling me, man, because I can't get out of bed. I had some sort of vertigo, for lack of a better thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think I had vertigo, but I had something to where when I got up, let me preface this. We played Download or Nebworth with Maiden. Had a day off the night before. I'm partying with Dave Murray, Armin, my deceased guitar tech.
Yeah.
And we're just having a good time. And, you know, get to hang with Dave Murray that often. I'm like, this is pretty cool, man. One of my heroes. So we're hanging out, doing all that, and we play that day, like, you know, 4:30. So I'm probably still a little hungover, going out there doing my thing, have a couple waters, party starts again.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, we ended up going to Tilburg. So we had a bus ride, we had a ferry, bus ride, get to a hotel, I feel great. I wake up like 2-3 in the afternoon. And I'm like, man, something's wrong. I go to the bathroom because I'm like, I don't know if I got to hurl. I don't know what I got to do. And so I made myself hurl. And I'm like, do I got food poisoning? I'm like, no, I don't eat anything that gives me food poisoning. I don't do anything like that. So then I put my hands on the porcelain god and I try to headbang. I'm like, can I headbang? And I wish this was video because I wish I could convey this to the people. Like, if I would headbang, my head thought I was doing this.
Like moving. Oh.
So it would be
instead
down.
Instead of up and down, it was
a down, half circle down.
Wow.
And I was going
like a curvy headbang. Straw.
Yeah, dude. And that's what was making me sick. And I figured that out. And I went, man, I don't know how to fix this. So I went back to bed. Like I said, I was in touch with my tour manager. And I'm like, dude, I don't think I could pull this off because I can't stay out of bed for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first show I ever canceled. It was weird.
Well, did you have some kind of a vertebrae problem or
no? Disc I think at the end of the day, I don't think I had vertigo. I think I had a little bit of exhaustion,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of dehydration.
Okay.
From all the liquor,
right?
Because like a year later, we went to Australia, and Tom had something similar to me, and I looked at him, and he was white as a ghost. And he's a big coffee guy, so the caffeine will dry him out. And I'm like, man, I think you and I had a little bit of the same thing. Mine was a lot harsher than his. But, yeah, we had to cancel a show in Sydney because of him for that. I think that was Gary Holt's first show.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, we're talking today about, you mentioned earlier, like, you guys had a great show. And you said it's the second show of the tour.
Yeah.
But you feel like it's mid-tour.
Yeah.
But this lineup that you have right now, the new lineup with
that's what happens at a live show. Yeah. Drunk people come in. It's funny because I made that guy drunk
all night. Yeah, you made him drunk, so you win. But you're talking about this lineup that you have with Gary and with Paul now.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, purists will say it's half Slayer. But to me, and I say this, and I, you know, I've gotten to know you pretty well. We've run into each other quite a bit over the last 3 years at shows. And I've seen Slayer more than I ever have in my life. And this lineup, it's could be the best one you've had, in my opinion.
No disrespect to the any lineup of any time. Man, it's guns blazing.
Yeah.
It's guns blazing. Gary Holt is a guitar hero. And I used to say that about him when me and Jeff were playing. He was in Exodus. I'm like, this is a guy that to me is like Glenn Tipton. He got, as far as guitar players go, he got left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I compare him to Tipton because, in my eyes, Glenn Tipton was an innovator, and nobody gives him any innovator respect. And to me, Gary Holt's that guy.
Hmm.
But he just wasn't in a popular enough band to get that respect. So, of course, he was my first choice. And Bo Staff has been here before, and if Bo Staff never quit this band, he would still be in this band. There never would have been a gray area.
Yeah.
But he always quit for whatever reason, and he was always my friend. You know, there's never any weird thing, which is weird in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody quits, you're like, oh, I hate that guy. No, Paul's always been my friend. And the oddest thing is, when we went to Australia, right before Paul came back.
In 2013, we were there together. When you had John Deddy on drums, maybe?
13 or 12.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I don't remember. But Deddy was drumming.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
When Dave Lombardo quit. Right.
Yeah, and Deddy covered us, which he killed it, and I admire him for
this
that.
This was when, just for people that don't know, is Dave had left the band or had an issue. We can talk about that. But John Deddy was already – tell us the story. John was drumming for Anthrax.
He was drumming for Anthrax, and he had already played with us. And when that all went down, we had like 8 days to get a drummer. To go to Australia, which to have a visa is another whole issue. So
right. You don't even have time to get a visa.
Yeah. So I know John Deddy's there. John Deddy's always been my friend, too, since he's been in the band. And I hit up John. I'm like, dude. Well, actually, I asked Tom first. I said, hey, are you cool with this? I said, because John Deddy can bail us out.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit up Deddy. I'm like, hey, man, I don't know where you are in the world, but we're going to be in Australia together. And I said, I kind of need somebody to play our set. And he's like, hey, man, I'm home. So me and Deddy actually got to rehearse for 3 days.
Because you guys kind of live close to each other.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
And I would have thought he was okay with it anyway because he's so anal about his playing that it would have been fine. But I'm glad I got to play 3 rehearsals with him. And it was golden, man.
Just you and him woodshedding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was golden, and he played that round, and that's how it went.
Did you call like Scott Ian at all or anybody in the Anthrax camp and say, hey, man, do you mind if we borrow your drummer for this, or just kind of like?
I think I might have texted. I'm pretty sure I texted Scott, and he's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we go back. We're all good friends now. Slayer, Anthrax, Megadeth, Metallica. Love all those dudes.
Mm-hmm. And there is, it's funny because a lot of people don't understand. They like to think that there's some big animosity sometimes, but we're all doing the same thing. And it's like, dude, I need some help. Like, you know, like, I lost my guitar. Can I borrow your guitar? Dude, here you go. You know what I mean? There's a lot of camaraderie like that if it's somebody that you know and respect.
Of course.
You know, it's no problem at all.
Of course. But if I don't know him, I ain't taking that shitty guitar. I ain't taking it.
Well, and the crazy thing with Soundwave was Deddy was the star of the tour because he was playing in Slayer and Anthrax at the same time. And you guys even had a show or maybe 2 shows together, Slayer and Anthrax.
Yeah. I know there's one.
There was one.
So could have been 2.
Deddy played the whole Anthrax set.
Yeah, dude, he's an animal.
Had 45 minutes off, changed his shirt,
and
played. It's funny. I saw, I was talking.
I feel sorry for his drums. He hit so hard.
Right. Dude, I remember.
I've seen him. I'm like, God damn, man. I feel sorry for the drums. He's beating the shit out of them.
I remember Metallica had a party the first night of Soundwave for all the bands. I don't know if you went or not, but they had kind of a barbecue sort of thing.
I didn't, but I did that with them before the Big Four in Europe.
Okay, so Lars is there, and he's like, who's this guy? He's playing drums for Anthrax and Slayer? I was like, yeah, it's John Deddy's over there. He goes, he's taller than me, and he's got better hair.
Yeah, Lars is a little bit hair deprived.
And doesn't want to be, not like you.
He's 6 foot something. Yeah. He's gigantic.
He's like a golden god, and Lars is sitting there like, maybe he could be the drummer for Metallica too.
He could.
He probably could.
Dude, he could have played all four sets. If there's a big four show, he could have done all of them.
Yeah. And I definitely picked John Deddy as my drummer in my thrash fantasy lineup. If there was such a thing, if it was a DraftKings option, I'd do it, but it's not. But I'll stick to playing 1 week fantasy football at DraftKings.com. Kerry, I know you like the Raiders. You should go check out some fantasy football on DraftKings. You know why? Because you can get some instant cash by playing fantasy football at DraftKings. Okay? Do you know how much you can get? Huh? Do you know how much? I'll tell you what. You can get a free shot at becoming DraftKings' next millionaire. We're talking millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. A little callback to the primetime players. Go listen to them on Talk is Jericho. Listen, if you want to be a millionaire, use my promo code Y2J. It gets you a free shot at winning $1 million. And you can win that dinero by Sunday if you play right now. Okay? DraftKings holding the biggest fantasy football contest ever. $10 million in prizes are up for grabs. Including $2 million for first place, $1 million for second. Say it with me. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. You know what playing fantasy football at DraftKings.com means as well? It means instant cash. No season-long commitments. Not worrying about who's injured or suspended. It means you play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. It's fantasy football on demand, just like the Talk is Jericho podcast, okay? We got a little symbiotic function going on here. You guys know that football isn't really my thing. I'm a hockey guy. I'm a thrash metal guy. Like I said, if there was a thrash metal fantasy football league, John Deddy would get the call. But listen, playing fantasy football at DraftKings is so easy, even I've been winning money. Not millions of dollars, but a couple bucks. It's good. You play, you pick your players, you pile up the points, and you pick up your cash. You make your money and never give it up. Little zit remedy there for your ass. All right, that's it. Go to DraftKings.com. Use the promo code Y2J to play for free to win your share of the $10 million in Sunday's Millionaire Maker event. Enter Y2J now for free entry at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Make some cash and do it today. Now, I'm not sure if Kerry King's a big fantasy football fan, but I know he's a big wrestling fan, or he used to be, and I'm pretty sure he's also a fan of Uber. All of us who are on the road is a fan of Uber because it's so convenient when you're on the road, when you don't have a car. It's been a great option for me. I don't rent as many cars as I used to in all the cities I visit. I'm in L.A. right now, used Uber to get here from the airport, from LAX. I'm going to use Uber to get back. I know all you guys have the Uber app on your phones as well. You know how easy it is to use. And the drivers who give me rides, all really friendly, all really cool, great stories. They all love working and driving with Uber. I asked them about it, how they got started, why they do it. They all have the same story. They love being able to choose their own hours, be their own boss, and earn seriously great cashola. And it's amazing. So easy to get started. You just need a car and a licencio, okay? You need flexible work hours if you like them. If you want to do a job that's going to pay some good money, you need to drive with Uber. I've chatted with drivers who drive with Uber as a full-time gig. I've ridden with drivers who drive with Uber as a second job, a part-time thing, because they got families, or they're in school, or they're in a rock and roll band, whatever it may be. It's great either situation. If you got kids, you work around their schedules. If you're a student, you're driving between classes. You just open up the app whenever you want to work, then drive for a few hours, give a few rides. It's completely up to you. You go wherever you want. It's totally on your convenience. You don't have to punch in the clock and work for 8 hours straight. You want to work for 20 minutes? Do it. You're driving downtown and want to take a passenger with you, make a couple extra bucks, do it. Why not? Now is the prime time to cash in driving with Uber, and you're going to thank me for telling you how to get paid every week. And who knows? I could be the one getting in your car when you drive with Uber. You got a car, right? You got a license? Check. Put them both to work for you and start earning serious, life-changing money today. Sign up to Drive with Uber or visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Sign up and make some easy money today. All right, let's get back to the king.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
How was the Big Four shows when that came to be? I guess it was about,
you know,
4 years ago
up,
or so.
When they came, it's longer than that, man.
5 years?
We have
years?
No concept of time.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Was that a month ago? No, it was 10 years ago, Kerry.
You know, I went into that thinking this is going to be really cool for the fans. And I came out of it thinking, man, I'm glad this happened because I reconnected with Metallica. we were never at odds, but we just ran in different circles.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems odd, but that's exactly it, dude.
Were you friends with them back like in the early 83, 84?
We were friends with everybody.
Right.
Because we're all trying to do it.
Mm-hmm. All kind of from the California,
yeah,
Southern
California.
Yeah, we were Northern
all California. Camaraderie, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when Clash of the Titans happened, I think it happened because Metallica was so big they didn't need a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we all got together to try to make the three of us as big as Metallica.
Right.
You know, I guess, so to speak. But, you know, that was fun, too. That one was more... Clash of the Titans was more, I'm better than you, and I'm going to show you how I'm better than you.
Because that was Anthrax. Anthrax, Megadeth, and Slayer, right. Yeah.
But that was a really cool tour. And I was talking about this the last 2 days. Alice in Chains opened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool because I knew them from Man in a Box. I hated Man in a Box. It's a radio song. But all the other stuff they played was so intensely rock and roll. I don't even want to call it rock and roll. It was so heavy in some form. I don't even know how to describe. Alice in Chains heavy.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Almost Sabbath-y, like 71, 72.
I don't want to call it Sabbath, yeah. Man. It was them.
Mm-hmm.
It was just them.
Mm-hmm.
And 20 years from now, there's going to be somebody doing what they did. 10 years from now, you know, and you're going to say, that's the Alice in Chains heavy. Because it wasn't Sabbath. Like, we touch on Sabbath, and people that do what we do, you know, reference Sabbath. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure Alice in Chains would have been part of that. Heavy equally, but I can't relate it to Sabbath.
It was a little more haunting, too, with the double vocals, you know, with Jerry and...
Oh, man, they sound
and
so
Lane's
good.
Vocals
Lane,
together.
Dude, I wish so much... that a lot of our friends hadn't died, but Lane Staley was such a joy.
Really? Tell us, like, no one really knows much about Lane.
Lane, dude, he can, for a singer to be able to control his treble to bass, you sing.
Mm-hmm.
You probably can't do that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Dude,
yeah,
Lane,
the way.
He would, it would be like, if I'm playing lead on a lead pickup and then switch to my rhythm pickup, Lane could do that with his voice.
And that's really hard for people that don't
know.
He
was a singer's singer.
Yeah, good singer's singer, exactly.
I mean, I don't know. I'm usually not without words.
Mm-hmm.
Lane is that good.
What was he like as a dude? Did you ever hang out with him on those tours?
He was cool. And, you know, on Clash of the Titans, he wasn't out of his mind yet, you know, so you still got to see Lane. And they had I can't even remember what the first album's called. We Die Young's on it.
Yeah, it's called, I think I see the cover of my Brainwashed.
I know, me too.
Yeah, what is it called? Headspace, weird.
Because
yeah.
All I do is go to Dirt, because Dirt's such the record.
Yes.
But Lane, dude, he was that cool dude that I would aspire to be him if I was a singer, because
mm-hmm.
he was so good. And then after Clash of the Titans, I think next time I saw him, I think they were on Lollapalooza, and they had the cargo net in front of the stage, which... a band like us can't do because people are going to climb it. And he had his hair slicked back with shades on, and it really reminded me of Jim Morrison.
Mm.
Big time. I'm like, dude, this is his Jim Morrison phase. It was really sick. And then he kind of fell off, and it was unfortunate. But, dude, one of the singers of our generation, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And their first big tour, because you would think, like, if it's the Clash of the Titans, it would be Exodus or Death Angel or Testament. But you guys kind of went outside the box to take a band like that.
Yeah, I don't remember how that happened, how it went down. And I probably wasn't happy about it because of Man in the Box, but after I met them and watched them, they're such a badass rock and roll band. I mean, you can call it grunge, whatever you want. They were a badass rock and roll band,
mm-hmm.
a dark rock and roll band. And they were great. And I remember seeing them. I remember we were talking about this earlier. I remember seeing them at Red Rocks when we played in Red Rocks, and I'm out there watching them. So I always watch them. They became friends of mine, and I admired them. And people are just throwing half-gallon jugs of piss onto the stage. And Lane said something derogatory. So they got more half-gallons of piss thrown at them. And I admired that they kept doing their shit. They played their set, and they won everybody over because they didn't say, hey, stop throwing stuff at me,
yeah,
you know.
We're leaving, yeah.
It was awesome. It was a magic moment. It was great.
So we kind of touched on the Big Four before. How did that come to be in your wheelhouse? Because I'm assuming when there's the Slayer
offers or decisions, they're coming through you, or at least you're hearing about them with Tom and whoever else.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
That depends who you ask. I know Lars takes a lot of credit for it, and maybe he should. I don't know. Because in the business part of it, I don't pay attention. I know our manager takes a little bit of responsibility for it. But when it came up, I'm like, hell yes, man. This should have happened sooner. And I think it goes back to an Iron Maiden show that was at the Forum in L.A. And I went.
I was there, too.
Did we hang?
We did hang.
Damn it.
I have a great.
I was pretty wasted that
night.
So
was I. Here's why I know. This is great. I'll tell you this quickly. I have a great Lars and Steve Harris were talking to each other. And I was like, I have to get a picture of these guys, but I don't want to interrupt them. I just have to be there. So I went and stood behind them, and I gave my cousin my camera and said, take the picture. You might only have a second. So I walked behind them, stood, turned around, and looked, and he took the picture. There's a mirror. In the mirror, your head is in it. I was like, here's Lars.
That was hilarious before you mentioned me.
There's Lars, Steve, and Chris. And if you zoom in, you can see Kerry King over there.
That's funny.
So that
well,
was
I was talking to Lars, and I never really had a problem, you know. It was just press banter we had between each other. And we're just hanging. You know, me and Lars, I think Trujillo was there that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Trujillo since Suicidal.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, we're hanging. And, like, I don't know. A couple months later, the Big Four came around. And I think it was Lars saying, hey, King's all right. You know, he don't hate us. There's no weird shit going on here. And it came to be. And I'm like, absolutely, I want to do it. And I would love to do more, but I think there's things that happened with another band that probably squashed that.
Yeah, right. Another band that may or may not begin with the letter M.
Yeah.
But how was that the first night? Because the big story is that you guys all kind of had you mentioned it, kind of a dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't remember what city that was. Poland, Bulgaria, one of the two. I'm like, yeah, I'm into this. Sure. I mean, I got nothing against these guys, but you haven't talked to them in 15, 20 years.
Which is so crazy, right?
Because, as I said, different circles.
Yeah.
So I go in. I go in late because I didn't want to really be there to mingle, you know.
You're not much of a mingler.
And, well, I am, but I didn't know what to expect.
Right.
So I went in, and we're in this place.
Was it just band guys allowed?
Only band
like no
guys.
Management, no family, no wives?
No tour managers.
That's pretty
no
cool.
No roadies. Nothing.
So there's four.
I mean, I got taken there, and I'm like, all right. So whenever we're done, come get me.
Right. So it's 4, 12, there's 17 guys there, if you want to, yeah. Which is really
so
cool.
So I get there, and I find this bar where there's bottles everywhere. I'm like, wow, this is way more awesome than I thought. Tequila, vodka. Tequila in Europe is a hard find, and it was good tequila. Tequila, vodka, gin, rum, whatever. And Fernet Branca, I'm like, Scott Ian comes up, I'm like, dude, who the fuck's drinking this Fernet Branca? That's the nastiest thing I ever drank.
What is it, like liqueur?
It's a digestive.
Oh, like
that's all you need to know.
Cognac or something, right?
No. A digestive. It's nasty.
Okay.
Kirk Hammett loves it.
He loves like, Courvoisier, so it's that type of stuff.
I'm like, Kirk loves this? And then Scott's like, yeah, I like it too. I'm like, what's wrong with you? But they dig it now. Frank Bello loves it.
Yeah,
but, dude, the first time I told my wife, my girlfriend at the time, I loved her. I was trying to make her have Fernet Branca. I'm like, you got to try this. It's so nasty. I'm like, I love you. And we drank it, and we got married and been married 12 years.
So you guys,
I guess that was the thing,
that
Fernet
was
Branca.
That was what worked. That's the aphrodisiac, gentlemen, if you're looking to tell your lady you love her.
Yeah, so you go it in may or may not work.
But you found all this kind of really cool alcohol, and then there's dudes there, and did you guys just sit down like at a giant table, like the round table?
There was a bunch of tables, and I came in late, so I think I sat with Broderick and maybe Ellefson, because it was the closest table to where I came from, so I just joined into that table. And like I said, you know, I haven't seen these guys in a while, so I don't want to just jump in and say, hey, I'm your best friend.
Yeah.
Like, I want to feel it out. And we did that, and it was cool. We ate, and, you know, we did our thing, and the Big Four shows were great.
Yeah, there was some classic stuff.
Yeah, man. I had a good time, and I would like to do more.
That's good. That's cool. And did you get a chance to talk? Like, it's funny because I know that with Lars and you know with Mustaine, do you have a relationship with Hetfield? Do you talk to him at all? Is he a guy that you just go up to and say, "What's up, man?"
I talk to Hetfield. Hetfield's a little bit like Tom, and he doesn't make himself available.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of but Hetfield will take it upon himself to come and see you at least once a week. You know, and if that's who he wants to be, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I was on that metal show, and I know it aired recently, mm-hmm. not from when this airs, but
right.
And they asked me about Zach Wilde because Zach Wilde was playing guitar, and they said, "No, Kerry, you still drink? Do you miss drinking with Zach Wilde?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I miss drinking with Zach Wilde, but you know, whatever Zach needs is my top priority. If Zach's not drinking, I'm cool with him not drinking. You know, I don't need him to drink to have fun with him."
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is.
Right, right. Because James is the same way.
If he wants to be to himself, that's cool. I admire when he comes in and say, "Hey, James, it's good to see you. Yeah. You know, we've been friends for a million years. And, you know, I appreciate you coming."
It's amazing to think what you guys, you know, created, along with Exodus and a few other bands, Overkill. But you started a whole new movement in music the same way that the Beatles and the Stones did, or, you know, Nirvana did, or whatever. It's like you started a whole genre of music, basically.
Yeah, that's the thing that's hard to talk about because I'm in it. I'm part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to embellish on it makes me an asshole. You know?
But from an outside, like, for example, today I was watching your set from the side of the stage. And it, like I said,
that was a good set today.
It was a good set. And like I said, I've watched probably 10 or 12 shows over the last couple of years. And my favorite was one of the ones in Australia when it was so sunny out that your poor bald head was red. That was my pink and red.
I'm not sure if that was a burn or just blood going through the melon.
But I'm listening to a song like, you know, War Ensemble or something like this, or, you know, even Rain and Blood or whatever. And I'm thinking, this is 1986. Hell Awaits 1985, and I mean, nobody, I mean, you know, nowadays you hear, there's a lot of bands that play fast, a lot of bands that play heavy, but in those days, nobody did anything close to that. There was Kill 'Em All, and then you guys came along and made it even more evil, you know, and heavier and faster. What was the mindset? Like, what was going on? Like, why?
The mindset, I think, amongst us was, let's just take this to the next level. I was a gigantic Venom fan, and Venom, Motorhead, Jeff with punk kind of forged its way into making Slayer what it was.
Like, what kind of punk was Jeff into? Like DRI, or was it like Dead Kennedys?
I don't know. I probably wouldn't have been DRI yet.
It's a little bit early, right? Yeah. I'm trying to think who was punk that was around
then. He would have been into Minor Threat.
Gotcha.
Adolescence, who I love. But at the time, I didn't get.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was a singer guy. I was a Dio.
You Halford. Like Priest, and yeah.
I was into the singer. And punk didn't have the guitar players. So I was into metal. That's why I was into metal. Mm-hmm. That's why I didn't understand punk, because it was just anger and aggression. And it sounds funny for me to say that right now, because that's what we are.
Right.
But at that point, at that point, I'm like, I don't get this, man. You know, it's just shitty guitar sounds. And some dude just screaming crappy lyrics. And it took me a minute. I'm like, oh, I get it. It's angst. I get it. And that's what we became, you know, kind of a crossover between metal and punk of some sorts.
Were you listening to like a record like Kill 'Em All and going, we want to be heavier than that?
I don't know. You know what I wanted to be more heavy than was Rat and Motley Crue. You know, it wasn't about being heavier than my friends. It was about... You know,
just, being having that scene.
It was about being extreme. And, you know, I knew Metallica were my brothers. Megadeth, I mean, I played their first 5 shows. They were my brothers. Anthrax weren't my brothers yet, but they became my brothers. You know, and it wasn't about that. It was about, you know, just expanding what was happening.
Were you a fan of Exodus at the time? You know, like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Exodus' first record is one of the most priceless records ever.
Exodus is kind of underrated when you're talking about the big four, and that is the big four. But if there was like a big
totally
five,
underrated.
People have Overkill or Death Angel. It's got to be Exodus.
And it could be Testament too.
That's
man.
True too, right? That's true.
There,
too.
There's a lot that aren't in that big four, and none of us named us that. That's just what people called us.
Yeah, that's the press, right?
So you got Testament, Exodus, maybe not Death Angel.
Came a couple years later, right? Yeah, Overkill. From the East Coast.
Well, yeah, and then Machine Head came guns blazing. in the early 90s.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
But
different decade, though, right?
Of course.
If you're talking about 83, 84.
Of course. That and was they had a weird section.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like America hasn't forgiven them for that. But in Europe, they're right below us.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Machine Head.
Right, yeah.
Rob Flynn's one of the greatest singers of our era.
Have you toured with them before?
Dude, I demanded they did our 94 tour.
Really?
Yeah. On
Diabolus Bleed
Music, something.
Oh, Bleed in My Eyes. Burn My Eyes.
Burn My Eyes. Thank you.
Something. Is there other bands like that you've demanded to have on tour with you?
I think it's only Machine Head.
Really?
Because me and Paul were sharing a room, because I lived in Phoenix at the time. We were sharing a room in Orange County. We were working on Divine Intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might have been done. I don't know. And I played the CD, and I'm like, I want these guys. I heard the first thing, and all you hear is, "Whoa!" I'm like, oh, man, it's another death metal singer. I don't want to have this. But that record's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want these guys on everywhere we go. And I demanded it. And that's the only time I've ever said, these guys need to be on our tour.
That's cool.
And they were. We took them in the States. We took them to Australia. I think they were in Europe, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how much I went, these guys need to be seen.
Is it weird for you, like you're talking about Machine, obviously some Slayer influence there. I mean, you could go play in a crappy little pub, and in between your songs, some guy's going to be yelling, Slayer! Slayer! Like, you hear it all the time. Like, Slayer has become, like, this iconic entity. Is it weird for you to think that? Because you're, and this is something that, it's funny, but you're Kerry King, and on stage you're Kerry. But backstage, you're one of the most laid-back dudes. You're the sweet, sweet guy. I shouldn't say that.
Stop
right,
it.
Right, right.
Shh.
But, I mean, how is that for you when you see in like Slayer shirts and people yelling Slayer, and it's become something that's bigger than just the guys in the band? It's a brand.
It's a brand, and I'm a very lucky person that people think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I've heard friends do it at a Britney Spears concert. They'll say, hey, I heard somebody say Slayer at a Britney Spears concert. And I'm like, oh, that's odd.
Everywhere. It's Freebird and Slayer. That's the most chanted thing at any gig.
So I guess I did good. You know?
What do you think it is about your band that made it get to this point?
I think, and I've said this a million times, I think metal has the most fans that are so tuned into it that it's part of their life. And I think thrash, and especially Slayer, is that much more above that. And I think that they feel a bond with us because I'm just like them. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't in this band, I'd be where they are, watching whoever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, not Slayer, whoever. And I think it just translates more than anything, than any other band, not band, any other music genre.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see me in my house. This is what I wear.
Yeah,
you know, I dress up for the stage. I put on my leathers,
right? But, and your chains.
You know, this is how I am.
Actually,
I'm just like the fans.
When I went to your house one time, you gave me a funny hat. You had a bunch of funny styrofoam hats.
Yeah,
Halloween hats. So it was like a big giant styrofoam mohawk, or like
we had tons of shit.
You got to put this on.
I'm like, that was around Halloween. I don't know if it was around Halloween, but we had the Halloween.
We made
hats.
It anyways, man. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm sitting here with Kerry King of thrash metal god Slayer, and I got to admit, I'm kind of wondering how many pairs of women's undergarments Slayer have collected over the years. Sometimes not a lot of chicks at Slayer shows, but I'm sure there's been a few that have thrown a couple of bras on stage, a couple of panties. Is. I wonder if metal chicks are still throwing up bras nowadays. And if they are they throwing up their MeUndies? I bet you they don't, because MeUndies are too good to throw on stage. These are not some kind of convenience store cotton underwears. These are the sexiest, most well-made, comfortable undies on the planet. They are amazing for girls and as guys. You know what? I'm gonna take my undies off and throw them at Kerry King and his sexy beast bald head. That's what I'm going to do. He can wear it like a hat, like a funny hat that I wore at his house. Listen, They're too comfy to take off, so I'm not going to do that. MeUndies don't ride up on you. They do moisture wicking. It leaves you cool and dry all day. They don't shrink up when you wash them, so you know they're always going to fit great and be as comfortable as the first time you put them on. And I don't think I need to remind you about the hibble-dee-dee. Check them out at MeUndies.com. Use my promo code Jericho. You get 20% off your first order. And MeUndies make more than just super comfy underwear. They make the softest, most comfortable socks, hoodies, t-shirts, etc., etc. See all the fruit styles at MeUndies.com. Your skin is going to love you. Your significant other is going to love you. MeUndies products really are that soft and zinlgay. Okay? You aren't going to want to take these off, but you're going to want to take, your partner's going to want to take them off so you can get that hibbity-dibbity because you look so damn sexy. I'm telling you what, get yourself some MeUndies now. And if you do want to check them out, go to MeUndies.com/Jericho. You get 5, 10, 15, 20, 20% off your order and free shipping, okay? 20% off your first order and free shipping. That's amazing. Save even more when you buy a whole pack of them. And ladies, if you buy a pack, you got more to toss on stage at your favorite rock star. Maybe it's Kerry King. Maybe it's Bruce Dickinson. Maybe it's Chris Jericho. I don't know. Some of the best money you ever spent on undergarments, MeUndies.com/Jericho. And they come with a money-back guarantee. You got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Go to MeUndies.com/Jericho now and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. All right, we're not done with Kerry King. We got to get into the new Slayer album, Repentless, the first without longtime guitar player Jeff Hanneman, and we're going to get into that with the King right after this. But first, I got to give you the details about another cookie app that I downloaded recently, the TrueCar app. I've been using TrueCar to decide what kind of new car to buy. I want to get a new car. I don't like buying cars. I'll tell you why. I don't like going and hanging out at the dealership. It smells like stale coffee. I don't like having to deal with all the cheesy car salesmen trying to get me on the hook for TrueCoat and all this other stuff. I don't want to deal with that. I just want to buy a new car, and TrueCar is letting me check out the prices on the make and model of the car I want with no hassle. I can see what it costs, how much people who live around me paid for the car. It's made it so much more convenient, so much easier. I don't have to spend hours down at the dealerships. I don't have to worry about all the BS. I just go to TrueCar. They've created a mobile app that makes buying a new car so simple and actually kind of fun and very easy to use. Okay, here's how you do it. All you do is download the TrueCar app, and in 5 minutes, you create the car you want. You choose the make, model, special features, and even the color. And once you have your specs filled out, you can see what others paid for the same car. That's what I've been doing, searching the kind of car I want with certain features and seeing if it's available in the color I want. And when I say find out what others paid for the car you want, I mean people who actually live in your neighborhood. That's cool. People actually around you. They're buying the cars from the same dealer that you might go to, okay? Once you see what other people paid for the car you want, you lock in the guaranteed savings from TrueCar certified dealers in your area and save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. That is a lot of cash, all right? That's a lot of extra money. Think about that. No other app is going to make you that type of money. And then you print out your guaranteed savings certificate, take it to your TrueCar certified dealer, and get your car. No hassles, no haggling, no headaches, no TrueCoat, no hours of wasted time, no stale coffee smell. TrueCar makes it that easy. Maybe you can get an app for a stale coffee smell if you still want that. I don't. They got an app for everything these days. But how many save you the money that you're going to save on TrueCar? Listen, you want to buy a new car? Do the smart thing. Download TrueCar app. This is legit. It's real. It's easy. You're going to save time, save money, save us Y2J, and never overpay. You're going to download that TrueCar app, and you're going to do it today. Get your new car hassle-free. All right, let's get back to talking about the new Slayer album, Repentless, with guitarist Kerry King.
When you're talking about, Slayer being like this entity and creating it in 1983, and then now it's time for a new Slayer record, and it's the first record you've ever done without Jeff Hanneman.
Yep.
Now you've been touring for years with Gary, because Jeff basically was bitten by a spider and had...
He was.
His arm was, had like flesh-eating disease.
Dude, his arm was... up. I saw pictures of it. Jeff sent it to me, and it didn't look like an arm.
And this is a crazy thing, because people talk about it, and Jeff's obviously a legendary guy, but he was he sitting in, like, I'm just hearing hearsay, he was sitting in his hot tub.
That's the same story I got.
Bites his arm.
Yeah, I don't know where he was, but he was in some jacuzzi somewhere, and that's a story I got. And that is not a lie. I have no better story.
The spider bite caused this arm to start deteriorating.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff's the kind of guy that wouldn't have addressed it. Mm-hmm. You know, he would have just been like, whatever, you know.
Right.
That was who Jeff was. And, you know, this time wasn't the time to say whatever. And actually, his wife made him go to the hospital.
Really?
Yeah. And the dude, the doctor said, "Hey, man, first, I'll have this go. This is a great story that I don't think I've ever said." Said, first I'm going to try to save your life. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to try to save your arm, because that's how messed up he was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was serious.
So that's so crazy. And the thing is, I'm not saying this with any type of humor. It almost sounds like a Slayer lyric. You know what
I mean?
It's
weird, dude. It's weird. And that's how far Jeff let it go. First, I'm going to try to save your life. Oh, I left something out. First, I'm going to try to save your life. Then I'm going to try to save your arm. Then I'm going to try to save your career.
Oh, to still play guitar.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was messed up. And that was super weird, dude. But the funny part about it was Jeff's a guy that would let it get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
That's just who Jeff was.
Like, obviously, if you and
I... Yeah, he was a recluse. Everybody knows that. And the poor dude just was sitting in his house, letting his arm deteriorate.
And not saying anything about it.
Yeah.
So when you finally find out...
I mean, I'm 50. What are you?
44.
You know, we're invincible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're invincible. Yeah. We don't want to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
That's how Jeff was. Jeff didn't want to go to the doctor. He's like, man, I got this. And he didn't.
Did you have any inkling that there was anything going on, or did you just call him one day and go, do some gigs?
No. When we're off tour,
you know, I remember
we scatter.
That. Yeah.
We scatter.
So
even though he's like an hour away from me, he's an hour in a direction I don't go. You know how that is. People mm-hmm. know how that is. I mean, I haven't seen my dad in a long time because he's a direction I don't go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my dad. Jesus sick.
Right. You know? So how did you finally find out that his arm was messed up? Like, did you have a tour coming up and say, here, we're going out?
No, we didn't. Oh, we might have. It might have been that sound wave that we brought Holt onto.
I think actually. No. I remember seeing it.
Well, that's it.
I saw you at the Big Four at Indigo in California. And that's where Gary was playing. And Jeff came and played a couple songs.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yep.
And he was wearing a shirt that showed off his crazy, weird, red, swollen arm.
Yeah.
So that was
the last time he performed.
Right. So when you find out that you're going to be playing, is the first guy you're thinking is, I got to get Gary Holt in here? Or how, did you talk to Jeff and say, can you play? I mean, how did that come about?
I knew Jeff couldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
And I already had Gary in my back pocket for any future thing I'd ever do. And that's a hard conversation. I called Gary Holt, but probably early 2010. I said, hey, man, if I ever do anything, would you be into doing it? And he's like, man, I was hoping if this day ever came, you'd hit me up.
Hmm.
So we just kept it in our back pocket, you know. There was nothing. There was no music. There was nothing. Then the Jeff thing went down. I called Gary Holt again. And these are hard conversations, man. Because even though Gary's my friend, I don't know. You know, it's like asking a girl out to the prom, kind of.
Yeah, right?
And if you get turned down, you're like, oh, man, we suck. Fuck.
Well, because that's always the thing. Like, you and I should do something, dude. And then when you actually get the call.
Yeah, and I already had that okay.
Right.
And I said, hey, dude, we're going to Australia and Jeff's not going. And I said, would you like to play in Slayer?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. And we've been going ever since.
Did you guys have that conversation where, like, dude, I got to get someone to replace you for a bit?
I didn't have a conversation because he was in a hospital. And if we're scheduled to be somewhere, I have to cover our ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. After the fact, Jeff and Gary took pictures, and Jeff's like, man, couldn't be a better pick. And he's my only pick. I mean, I had a backup, but he's my only pick.
So you had the blessing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But the thing is, that's understandable. I'm sure Jeff would even agree with you on that. It's like, dude,
Yeah, dude. Me and Jeff and Holt go back 30 years. Well, 25 plus. And it's cool because... I'm not bagging on Priest when I say this, but he's from our era. He's our age. I've known him all my life.
He's in the scene, right?
Yeah. And he's the one, if anybody got left behind, he's the one that should be brought into prominence because he's that good.
Like you said, he was underrated and wasn't in the right band for it or whatever, you know? Did you ever talk to Jeff about coming back, or did you just knew that he just... Did he ever have
any... I talked to him a lot about it, and every time... And we had sporadic... tours or a couple shows here and there to where our manager would say, hey man, let's get Jeff involved. And I'm like, yeah, let's get Jeff involved. And I would bring him around and I would watch him play And it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, Jeff, you got to understand, Gary's playing this stuff, and he's playing it note for note.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's no room for gray area here, and I hope you understand what I'm saying. He's like, yeah, I get it. And I'm like, man, I want you to be there, and I want you to be part of what we are, but you got to understand, if there's somebody doing your gig, I don't want to say better, but if there's somebody doing your gig and you're not up to par with what he's doing, you got to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hardest thing I had to say. It was tough.
How did he react?
He said, I know.
I mean, that's the thing as a professional, man. You and I, whatever it is we're doing, if you know that you're not up to snuff, you don't want to, I'm not going to say embarrass yourself, but you don't want to go out there and be second rate.
Well, when he came out for the Big Four at Coachella, he was supposed to play four songs. And we rehearsed a little bit, and I said, listen, man, because I knew he wasn't where he needed to be, and I didn't want to make him a spectacle. I said, listen, dude, you're going to play two songs. He's like, well, I got the four songs rehearsed. I said, I know you got the four song rehearsed, dude. I said, I don't want people to focus in on what you're doing, because I don't want them to think you're not as good as you are, because you are good. And I'm sorry, but I think if you go out there for two songs, they'll notice it less. And I don't want people to have a bad memory of you.
Mm-hmm.
Not even knowing that was going to be his last gig. You know, I said, you're my bro, man. I want to protect what you are.
And out of respect, you know.
Yeah.
Like you said, the longer that someone's out there under par, they're going to notice it more.
Yeah, you're going to focus on it.
Yeah, exactly.
But that being said, when we're playing Coachella, when you're in Jeff's backyard, I can't let him not be on stage. I'm like, yeah, I want you on stage.
And it was a great moment. I don't remember what two songs he played. Maybe it was Angel and Rain or
South
whatever.
And Angel, yeah. I don't know.
But it was a cool moment because no one had seen him for a year or 2 years or whatever it was.
Secret.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That was cool.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was me protecting who Jeff was.
Right. Now, Jeff passed away a couple years ago or whatever it was. I remember we were at Golden Gods that day when it was announced that
passed
away. And that we decided to change that whole... I remember I talked to you about it. Like I said, hey, man, do you mind if we turn this into a celebration? And you're like, absolutely. You came out there, shot a Jagger and all that stuff. How was it making a record without him?
The weirdest part was him not being there.
Mm-hmm.
Because musically, me and him write everything.
It's your teammate.
Yeah.
Your partner, right?
So
for 30 years.
I mean, I took it when he got bit in 2010, 11, wherever it was. I took it upon myself to start writing a ton of shit in case Jeff came with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I didn't know if he was going to come back and have tons of shit or have nothing. So I wrote a bunch. I'm like, hey, man, if I write half a Slayer record and I got a bunch of other shit, I can play with a bunch of my friends. I got tons of friends that want to they've been wanting to play with me for years, you know?
Yeah.
And turns out I wrote an entire Slayer record plus half the next record. And we did use one of Jeff's songs on this one.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Did he send you some tapes or did you find
this? This is one we did at the end of the World Painted Blood session.
Hmm.
So it's been done, but it was kind of an afterthought then, so it wasn't polished.
Mm-hmm.
So in this session, we took that recording, had Paul play to it, Tom re-sang it. The only lead on it's mine, so there's no Jeff guitar on it.
Oh, so okay, so you played the rhythm on it.
I played the rhythm.
Officially, but it's his riff.
I played both rhythms since like the 90s.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So, unfortunately, no, Jeff is not on the record, but that's his song.
His riff is on it, yeah. Now, how was it with Gary? Did Gary write anything on the record? Just contribute
no,
solos?
No, I thought the best thing for Slayer historians and fans was... There's Everett. I thought the best thing historically for Slayer and fans was for Gary to play leads as the dual guitar thing.
Right.
Because you can't have dual guitars if there's no two guitars.
Yeah.
But as far as writing riffs, I didn't think Slayer fans would be as acceptable to it. Exodus fans, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, there's a crossover there. But I didn't think Slayer fans would be stoked if Holt wrote on this record. So, you know, maybe the next one.
Mm-hmm.
If Holt wants to. And I mean, I think it would be cool. But on this record, he has played some leads.
Well, because he just put out a new Exodus record, so it's kind of like, where does the line get drawn for him? Like, oh, this is a Slayer riff, and this is an Exodus, because there's a lot of,
I think he would know the difference, because there is a bit of a difference, and I think he would know that.
What do you think the difference is?
Exodus is just thrash, and Slayer's got this doomy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doomy.
Let me ask you this, Kara.
Dark.
Was Jeff AC/DC fans?
I'm a big AC/DC fan.
Because my favorite bits of Slayer songs or parts of Slayer songs are the groove parts. For example, Angel of Death. Everyone knows the classic rip round, digga 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 down. But it's the drums. South of Heaven or Season of the Abyss. It's like there's a real groove to it.
Sure.
And that's where I find it's like you guys almost swing. Which in thrash metal is like in Slayer. Slayer doesn't swing, but there is...
No, it's just dark. That's how I call
it. It's dark, but there's a groove to it.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, I wonder if he digs DC, because that's a total AC/DC vibe to it, which makes a great balance to the blast beats.
AC/DC, to me, I mean, I love the early AC/DC. Bon Scott's my hero, and I wish I could have seen them live other than on screen.
Right.
So much. And Brian Johnson's a badass too. Probably the best replacement singer ever.
Yeah. Are you talking about a replacement singer that passed away or just in general?
Ever.
Bruce Dickinson?
Oh, that's tough, man.
That's a tough one,
yeah,
right?
You're right.
But okay, so let's do this.
But they gotta be identical.
I agree. Like better than
Brian Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, agree with you on that.
Dickinson sings like a bird, for sure.
Yeah.
Brian Johnson sings AC/DC, and it's awesome. I agree. But I wish I would have seen AC/DC with Bon Scott. And I can't remember what was the beginning of this conversation?
Oh, we were talking about Slayer riffs, the difference between Slayer and Exodus. And I said Slayer has a bit of a groove. You said it's doomy, and I said, but there's a groove to it. And I was wondering if AC/DC might be a band that you dig because of that.
I do love AC/DC. Oh, I know where I was going. One of my favorite late AC/DC records is Razor's Edge, because it's dark.
Wow.
Those riffs are dark. That's what I wanted to talk about. Dude.
The song Razor's Edge, very dark.
Super dark. Yeah. I mean, really weird for Angus, because Angus is a bluesy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Bluesy rock and roll guy.
That's right.
And that album is dark. Love it.
You know what's cool? I'm sure you know this, but Phil Rudd got in his trouble, so they brought Chris Slade back in the band.
The bald guy. Yeah.
20 years later. Which, to me, it's like pretty cool, because I think he's 68 or something.
Wow.
And has been out of the band for 20 years, and here he is playing clubs, and then the next week he's in the biggest band in the world.
Let me tell you something, man. I could play drums for AC/DC. You could play drums for AC/DC, dude. I can keep time.
Yeah.
And it ain't fast. Like, yeah. Boom, tap, boom, I got this. Maybe AC/DC should hire me.
There's that groove to it, right? So we're talking about the new record, and you said that you basically wrote the whole record. Does Tom ever write anything at all?
Musically, no.
So lyrically, though?
No. Me and him worked on one song, and all the other ones I pretty much brought to him and say, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Do your thing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the record? I mean, you're first without Jeff.
Man, I'm stoked.
And Paul is in the band. Gary's in the band. Like, this is the first. It's like a rebirth almost in a lot of ways.
It's really awesome.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. I mean, there's heavy. There's fast. There's spooky. I would play any of these songs live.
Wow.
And that's You don't usually get that on an album. People say like, yeah, I may not play this one. It's good. You're going to like it.
Okay.
The fans are going to like it. You're going to dig it.
Did you feel any, not responsibility, but I'll use the word responsibility to Jeff's legacy. Like, did you feel like I want him to be proud of this? Or are you that type of guy? It happens.
I've never written a clean intro. It's always been Jeff.
Oh, okay.
And the clean intro.
Like a Season of the Abyss type intro type thing? Okay.
That's Hanneman. The clean intro to Stillness Comes. I've had that for 20 years. I just never had any friends to marry it to.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure. You know, I've never done a clean intro. And then I made that song, and I'm like, this is a good song.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was finished, I went, man, I nailed it. You know, and you don't know, because I never contributed that to Slayer. And on the album, there's another clean intro, and it's the same. And it's cool, because I didn't pick up for Jeff by any means, but I kind of took on what he did and made it Slayer, and it still sounds Slayer, and that's all I can do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Keep the legend going, you know?
Yeah. It's a good machine. It's still a badass machine, and we're going to rip some shit up.
Is there a difference between the way Paul plays than the way that Dave Lombardo played?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Did
you miss Dave at all? Dave's input at all in any way?
Dude, I love Dave. Dave's still a friend of mine. Dave made some bad choices, and unfortunately, it led to him not being in the band.
Mm-hmm.
Paul is a guy. Dave's a natural. Mm-hmm. Dave will stretch like 5 minutes before he'll go on. He'll do like a yawn stretch and go on stage. To where Paul's a guy that works every day to be as good as he is.
Mm.
It's really weird because they're opposite ends of the spectrum, but they end up in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
I could play with either one of them, man. They're both my friends, and I admire what they do.
Right. But like we said, man, the new lineup that you have is pretty smoking.
I'm stoked.
You know, when we first met years and years and years ago, you were a big, I don't know if you're a big wrestling fan, but you're a big Stone Cold Steve Austin fan.
I was, dude, because back then, wrestling wasn't as gay as it is now. I don't mean any offense to gay people.
You're using the term gay, not the
back then. Stone Cold was badass. The Undertaker was badass. Mm-hmm. The Rock was badass. There was just people that took names, you know?
Right.
And then it became that kiddie thing again.
PG-13, right?
Yeah.
But you used to wear, like, I remember seeing you wear Austin 316 shirts.
Oh, man,
on stage.
I wore that for an entire tour.
Yeah.
And he's the only other podcast I've done.
That's right. Yeah. Were you into wrestling as a kid, or did you just turn the TV on one day and see Austin and go, this guy's great? Or how did it come to that?
I think I had an amusement with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I saw people like Stone Cold, it just came in and said, no, this is my show.
Right.
And I'm going to kick the shit out of you.
Yeah.
That's when I went, this is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, Kane back then.
Hey, you're talking about late 90s, early 2000s. Maybe even
yeah,
because
I went to WrestleMania 2000.
Okay, so I was at that one, right? Yeah, so that was my first WrestleMania.
Yeah,
I was in the
I still got my chair because I was in the lower level.
See, and that was the cool thing when I first came to the WWE, just to see. Like, I remember you came one time. I remember Lemmy came one time. I remember we were in Houston and Billy Gibbons is in the front row, and you'd see like, wow, there's a lot of dudes that I love that are here watching this. It's really cool, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course we know what it is.
Yeah.
But when it was more realistic, mm-hmm. that was awesome.
Yeah.
And I had good times then. You know, I went and saw a lot of it, but I had, you know, the pay-per-views. I went to the 2000 WrestleMania, and I went to one of the, was it No Way Out, maybe?
Yeah, one of the ancillary ones.
And I still have those chairs.
Oh, so all the ones that were in Anaheim, basically, you went to?
Yeah. And some of the offshoots I went to.
Okay. You still have the chairs. Yeah. Those are great souvenirs, man.
Totally, man.
You know, like, you couldn't do that at a rock show because people don't really
want
to see chairs.
No, you don't want chairs.
But at the thing. The last thing I want to talk about is I texted you today because I know you're a big snake aficionado.
Oh, yeah.
Still, because I know Slash had to sell all his snakes. Are you still a snake guy?
I'm the biggest carpet python breeder probably in this continent.
So I went to your house that one time. You didn't have the snakes in there.
No, we used to, but not when you went. When you went, they were already at a warehouse.
So a carpet python breeder?
Yeah.
What's a carpet python?
Carpet python is one of the most common snakes in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and the carpet python name comes from they're like carpet. They're everywhere.
A carpet of pythons.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you breed them? Do you sell them to stores, or do you?
Ideally, I just took on a dude that's kind of an online broker. Who's got, you know, a big, I don't know, what do you call it, a big following?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have time to put them online. My dude that takes care of them don't have time to put them online. This guy has a following, and he puts them online, and he's moved 20 snakes in like 2 weeks.
To other collectors or other people? Just...
I don't know.
Right.
Collectors... I mean, if I'm at a show, if I'm doing a snake show, people will come and buy something because it's mine.
Right.
And I assume they know how to take care of snakes because they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they know how to take care of snakes. But some people just like, oh, man, this is a Kerry King snake. You know, I'm going to buy, you know, not the cheapest one, but something a little above that.
Yeah, right.
But there's people that, you know, they just, a lot of times online, they'll pay for something and pick it up at a show.
Hmm.
So there's no shipping.
So, but why snakes?
Because when I got into snakes originally, they're the kind of animal that doesn't take daily care.
Hmm.
So in the early days, when I would tour like a week or two at a time, I could just put some water in there and they'd be fine. You know, it's not like a dog, and I have my dogs, and, you know, it's a burden if I leave a dog with somebody. It's a burden if I leave a cat with somebody. I don't have to leave a snake with anybody.
Yeah, snakes, that's the thing. Like, I know, actually, you know the wrestler William Regal?
The English guy? Yeah, I remember
him. He's a big snake
I think you told me that
collector as well, and so was Slash. And like I told you the day, I went out to my dock. I live in Florida, in Tampa, and we're on the lake, and there was, you know, people are in the springtime, there's nobody on the lake. And finally, summer is coming. We go out to the lake, and I walk on the dock, and the damn snake jumps out from underneath and walks over top of my legs and really aggressively. I'm like, ah! And it goes in the water, and it stays there. And then it starts swimming, so I chase it on my jet ski, and I'm looking at it, and... Dude, I honestly swear to God, I was like, I wish King was here. Or I wish Regal was here that could tell me if this is a water moccasin or not. And of course, My wife is like, it's a water moccasin. And I'm like, I don't know if it is for sure. But I've had issues with snakes before, and I've killed a few. And I told Regal, he's like, why would you kill a snake? Like, how would you deal? Like, are snakes as scary as we think they are?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay.
Absolutely not. Snakes aren't hunting you by any means.
Okay.
Snakes probably are looking to get away from you more than you're looking to go away from
them. Even like the poisonous water moccasins.
They're not looking to get you, man.
Yeah.
They don't have a vendetta against humans. You know? They're looking to get out. They don't want any part of you. That's why when you told me that story, I said, and you told me you didn't have a lance head.
No, yeah, it didn't have like a shovel head. Like I went and Googled it afterwards. A lance head, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I'm guessing, like I told you, it's like a, whatever kind of racer you have in Florida, because that kind of thing is fast, and I've seen them, and they're astonishingly fast, and they will get in the water and they will jam.
Yeah, and he did. This guy split. Yeah.
And I don't see a cottonmouth or water moccasin doing that, but you know.
What would a water moccasin do? They just kind of hang around.
I think it would just chill and not jump in the water.
Gotcha.
I mean, I'm not positive because I'm not from this area.
Right.
But that's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, like I said, because we don't understand them. So you see a snake, it's creepy.
Oh, yeah, dude. You know? And I got a lot of friends in Australia, and I love Australia. And Australia's got, I think, 7 of the 10 deadliest species in the world.
Yeah.
Which is ironic and weird.
And I think in spiders, too, like the most poisonous spiders.
Oh, yeah, spiders are bad. Yeah. And I got a lot of friends there in the zoos and all kinds of stuff. So whenever I go there, I get to go see all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff, which is really rad.
What's your favorite type of snake?
Carpet python.
Oh, the carpet python.
Yeah.
What do you
think? I mean, I got a guilty pleasure for South Brazilian boas. I got a handful of those and some random stuff.
What do you feed a carpet python?
It depends how old it is, you know. It starts with baby mice. It ends in big rats or rabbits.
How big are they?
Carpets, I mean, I think a reasonable average is 7-8 feet. But I've seen freaks that are 13.
Wow.
And that don't really happen. That's a freak.
What are they indigenous to? Are they, I mean,
Australia.
Okay. So you bring them to the States.
Well, not from there. I mean, they have to be here or come from Europe because we can't get anything from Australia.
Do you hatch, like, do they just, like, have a hatchery with eggs and they...
I got a bunch of eggs right now.
And how long does it take for a snake egg to hatch?
I believe... I haven't done it hands-on in a couple of years. I think it's 55, 60 days.
Wow. So would you have to put like a blanket on it to keep it warm? Or
no, dude. I got incubators that are set at about 88-ish. And you get a like a fluorescent light deal.
Yeah.
If you had a cover that was like the, I don't know, quarter-inch grate.
Mm-hmm.
I set that on top of some kind of substrate to keep them moist, and that's where they live.
Wow. And then they just... kind of break open and there they are.
Pop out when it's time.
I'm always thinking Indiana Jones when they cut the snake little eggs.
Yeah.
Last question, man. You're getting ready to do this tour with a new record. What's your favorite Slayer song to play live? And what's your favorite Slayer song that you wrote that you'd never play live? Like kind of a more of an obscure one.
Favorite song to play live probably be Raining Blood. It's
so
just
great.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun. It will always be in the set. And it doesn't matter if it's in the beginning or the end. People just light up. Mm-hmm. Like it's electric.
Once again, the groove at the beginning of that song is incredible.
Favorite song I wrote today?
Don't
play?
Yeah, I mean, is there a tune that you always thought would be bigger than it was and it just kind of fell by the wayside?
No, it's just, at this point in our career, it's fitting shit in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because...
But I mean, just on the record. Like like any song that you wrote that you thought that was really cool that you kind of never play.
I like In the Name of God. And I also like American. And sometimes there's just not room to fit them in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many things we have to play. And then besides that, there's so many things we have to play different than we played last time. Mm-hmm. In my eyes.
So you can't do the same set.
Yeah. Every I mean, tour. You have to have 5 to 8 of the same songs every time because they
belong
there.
You got your hits. Yeah.
So it's just, you know, fitting stuff in. I mean, I would really like to play Gemini, but there's not a whole lot of room to fit that into any set the way we're playing set these days.
Right. Yeah. And if you played it, the Slayer diehards would freak, and there'd probably be a lot of people going, what song
is that this? Would have to be a Slayer headlining tour, period.
Right. Totally. What? One more thing I want to ask you. I always wondered this. At the beginning of Hell Awaits, there's this killer backwards thing, and it's like, Signat, Signat, Signat.
You don't know what that says?
What does it say?
Join us.
Join us! Join us for what?
And you know where I got that?
Where?
Evil Dead.
Nice! That's some cool shit.
Yep.
Because they say that in Evil Dead, join us, right?
That's where I got it.
You just took it backwards.
So we said, join us and put it backwards.
Join us for what? A pizza or a Jaeger shot? Or
no, fuck you. Join Slayer.
Join the Slayer army.
Yep.
Dude, thank you so much, man.
Cheers,
excited,
man.
For the new record, and let's have another shot.
Oh, it's going
to
be good.
Thanks again to the King. Such a sweet guy. I really dig him, man. Very, very cool. Glad I got to talk to him in his dressing room at Welcome to Rockville. And the new Slayer album, Repentless, dropped today. If you want to buy it, you know where you can get it, at Amazon, and you know what you want to do. If you buy it on Amazon, use the Talk Is Jericho links. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the support or show sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit Talk Is Jericho. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A. Every time you use them links, Amazon will kick back a little money to the show to help with production costs. Easiest way to support the show, buy anything you want. Buy the new Slayer album, Repentless. Buy the new Iron Maiden album, The Book of Souls. Buy Kiss Alive. I've had a great string of rock and roll guests this week, haven't I? It's been amazing. These are rock and roll icons, all on Talk Is Jericho, one after another. Bruce Dickinson, Paul Stanley, Kerry King. Nobody is giving you guests like this anywhere. Nobody. All right. If you go buy those records, do it on Amazon. You won't be disappointed in any of them. You won't be disappointed in me because starting tonight, the Y2J WWE Fall Tour. Yay. We are in Edmonton on September 11th tonight, Calgary on the 12th. Then we head over to Toronto, a lot of Canadian shows. Then Syracuse and Rochester, 25, 26, 27. October 2nd in Trenton. October 3rd, the Y2J 25th anniversary. Exactly 25 years that I've been in the wrestling business at Madison Square Garden. Come check that out. I'm also going to be in Saudi Arabia, October 8th, 9th, and 10th. Mexico, 16, 17, 18. You know what shows and cities those are if you live there. October 30th, switch over to Fozzy. We're going to be with the Kiss Navy on the Kiss Cruise. Then we're taking the Cinderblock Party Tour back to the UK and Europe with Nonpoint, Sumo Psycho in tow. November 13th, it starts in Rotterdam. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information, all gig information, and get some VIPs, man. Come and meet us. We have the best VIP program in the world today. I want to come hang with you. Come hang with us. Come rock with us. Thank you guys for being here and rocking with me here on Talk Is Jericho. Thanks for downloading this show twice a week for free. And thanks for the great sponsors, MeUndies. Use my promo code Jericho. Get 20% off your first order. DraftKings, use my promo code Y2J to play for free. Uber, TrueCar, Recovery Max, you can get that at drugstore.com. And, of course, SeatGeek, use my promo code ChrisJ. Get $20 rebate off of your first ticket purchase. All right, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. Thanks to Kerry King for being here. Thanks to you for being here. And next Wednesday, taking it back to the WWE, I got Dana Warrior talking about the Ultimate Warrior. That's right, Ultimate Warrior's wife. will be here to talk all things Ultimate Warrior. And what a sweetheart she is, and what a great conversation.
It's the Warrior. He's going to be talked about on Talk is Jericho. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors.
Mm-hmm.
And shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.